This is Guildcast, episode 42, for August 19th, 2006. Welcome back to Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean. And in this episode, we'll be discussing green unique items once again, but this time I'll go over how green items have changed since the introduction of factions. First, though, there were some people who asked to be mentioned this week, including Prophet of Life, Flaming Swords Monk, and Terminator-ish Thing, who offered his services to anyone for a free Drox run, and also to possibly teach people how to run. Now, I forgot to ask him if he meant how to run to Drox, or just run in general, but still, you can't beat that. Now on to the game updates from the last week. On Thursday, August 17th, they added a Kurzik Recruiter and a Luxan Diplomat to the Great Temple of Balthazar. These NPCs are able to transport PvP characters to the Fort Aspenwood and Jade Quarry outposts. They're also able to transport role-playing characters who have previously visited these outposts. They added Zacian representatives to the Fort Aspenwood and Jade Quarry outposts. These NPCs are able to transport players to the Great Temple of Balthazar. Now, these new NPCs are for this weekend's newest event, where you'll be able to earn double Kurzik, Luxan, and Balthazar faction in the Fort Aspenwood and Jade Quarry competitive missions. Additionally, all PvP characters that have access to factions will now be able to participate in these missions simply by talking to these special Kurzik and Luxan NPCs that I mentioned. The Double Faction Fun starts at noon Pacific Daylight Time on Friday, August 18th, and ends at 11:59 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time on Sunday, August 20th, with the PvP character access remaining open even after the event ends. Some other things that were done during this update: they fixed a bug that prevented party size indicators from appearing over players' heads and outposts. They fixed a bug in the Kanai Canyon Alliance battle map that allowed Kurzik team members to leave their base before the game had started. They also fixed bugs and made improvements to the Raisu Palace explorable area. And they fixed a bug in the appearance of the intoxication effect. There was also a skill change during this update, where they modified Edge of Extinction so that creatures must have less than 90% health remaining in order for them to be affected. This is not good news for Rangers. And now on to the game news. As you may be aware, the winners of the Guild Wars World Championship selected 8 of their favorite skills, and from those, ArenaNet crafted attractive 1-inch skill pins. The first set was Crippling Shot and Aura of the Lich, which was released in May at E3. The second set was Contemplation of Purity and Energy Surge, which were released at the San Diego Comic-Con, and the third set were Gale and Eviscerate, which were released at Gen Con this year. And now you have a chance to collect the fourth set of pins at the Penny Arcade Expo, or PAX, where you can also play in the very first Guild Wars Live, and compete for $10,000 in the Guild Wars 10K Arena. No account is needed, just bring your willingness to compete. All participants in the PAX 10K Arena will also receive the first 3 skill pin sets while supplies last. So come play Guild Wars Live, compete for $10,000, and get your own set of these limited edition pins. The PAX Game Culture Celebration in Washington State will play host to the first ever Guild Wars Live event. Now, this Penny Arcade Expo, or PAX that I mentioned, will be taking place in Bellevue, Washington, on August 25th through the 27th. And if you're attending PAX, plan on taking part in the Guild Wars Live Sealed Play Tournament. PAX will be the second event to host a new Sealed Play 4v4 player versus player matchup, and anyone can participate. And it appears that ArenaNet has released a brand new trailer for Nightfall, featuring glimpses of breathtaking cities, lush landscapes, and terrifying new foes. Also previewed is brand new footage of the Dervish and Paragon professions. Download your copy today from the main GuildWars.com website and prepare yourself for Nightfall. And The Scribe is now on its 11th issue. It follows the struggle between the Luxons and Kurziks this week on a voyage from Fort Aspenwood to the Jade Quarry. The scribe also writes of some rumors about some new weaponry, and observes more acts of virtue in this week's scroll. This is still brand new as of the time I'm recording this, but some of the confirmed new weapons that they mention in the game include the Jade Sword, Guardian of the Hunt, Gloom Shield, Golden Maul, Grinning Recurve Bow, Lotus Staff, and the Salient Daggers. Contrary to much rumor, though, there don't appear to be any new greens yet from this update, and all of these items named are gold. So last week I talked about setting up a guild wiki, and I got some really great feedback on that idea. One email I got was from Rob Loach, who told me he's very familiar with setting these wikis up, and he's done it numerous times. He's currently in his third year as a programming student, so that was good enough for me. I gave him free rein, well, almost free rein, to do with it as he may. So he set everything up for me, and he did a wonderful job. So thanks again, Rob, for everything you've done. You can check out the new wiki at www.guildcast.com/wiki. That's W-I-K-I. There's also a link to it from the main guildcast.com page. Feel free to look around, add some notes of your own, or links, or anything relating to what was talked about on the show. Of course, the same rules apply to the wiki as do the forums. That is, basically, don't be a rude idiot. Now, I'll be checking these often and making additions or corrections where I can. Also, in several shows, I have some pretty detailed notes written, and some of them I actually have word-for-word scripts, almost, where I can actually go back and listen to the episode and fill in any words that I might have changed, and then I can add those notes to the wiki as kind of a transcript. Now, that might seem like a bit much, but I figured since I have the detailed notes still on hand, I might as well use them. And finally, I got a voicemail this week from Ixlium on the forums, who gives us some more good tips on weapon upgrades from last week's theme.
Hey Sean, this is Edward de Malay, also Lord Ixlium or Ixlium on the forums. Just want to drop you a quick audio note that really enjoyed the podcast on weapon modification. One thing that your listeners also might want to keep in mind is being able to use those extra mods to mod weapons specific for certain types of combat, such as if you're, let's say you're going farming for ice elementals, you may want to use a flaming sword hilt and then some type of like the +7 mod versus elemental damage. In the same regard, you could use the like ice type damage against fire elementals. So keep that in mind when assembling your weapons to specific types of combat. Anyway, keep up the good work with Guildcast, and we'll see you online.
I still remember the day that green items were introduced to Guild Wars. It wasn't even a year ago now, on September 7th, 2005, when they opened up Sorrow's Furnace. That update was a huge update, where they also introduced things like the Titan's Quests, locked chests with keys, tons of skill updating, and item updating, and they introduced the end of the attribute refund points, which was just a nightmare. Those things were horrible. But most importantly, it marked the birth of Dak. You know, Dak from Emberlight Camp that I mention probably every single show. What would we do without Dak? But seriously, green items aren't even a year old yet, and already there are 261 of them, according to guildwiki.org. When they first came out, they were something special, right? They were uniquely skinned items that you had to bust your hump to get, and you could only get them in two areas, which was Sorrow's Furnace and Grunt's Footprint. They spawned the 3- and 5-man farming groups that you first saw in the Deldramore War Camp, but now you see them everywhere. These greens had modifications to them that were mostly max and not found on any other item that you could craft yourself with regular upgrades, and they sold for tons of money in-game. Since then, though, they've been added to Tombs, Prophet's Path, Talus Chute, The Falls, Majesty's Rest, and just about every single part of Kanta. To me, unique green items have lost their intrigue. Now, to me, unique green items have lost their intrigue, and well, their uniqueness that they once held. 261, that's a lot. And many of these are even replicas of themselves, just with different skins. Okay, I understand that not everyone has both factions and prophecies, so you need to have a version of some from one game in the other. But 261? Factions has changed the whole meaning of greens, in my opinion. It went from being mostly about the performance of the item and partially about the skin, to being all about the skin and partially about the performance. This is an ironic complaint, though, coming from me, since I love the new factions' green skins. I think they're amazing. I'm all about item and armor skins, but with something labeled unique, I think it should be possibly unique. Or maybe they could make a next level of unique, like ultra mega unique, or hella unique, or no, seriously, this time we mean it, unique. Here's a perfect example. On Xingjie Island, the starting island of Kanta, there are greens available. What's this? Max modded weapons available to any noob who can find them? Nope, they're not max. In fact, most of them aren't even half max. The only possible reason I can figure out for these items to exist is their looks. In Tyria, we now have 93 green items. Now, while I went over most of these one by one in the last green show, I won't do that again this time. You're welcome. But what I will do is I'll go over the newest ones introduced on the June 15th, 2006 update. First, we have the infamous Rotwing recurve bow, dropped by Rotscale himself. Or herself. I never really checked. But this one was done in the spirit of a true unique item, meaning it's darn hard to get. You'll find Rotscale in Majesty's Rest, surrounded by some rotting dragons and smoke phantoms. It's actually possible to get two bows in one trip there, both from Rotscale and a rotting dragon. And then there's the Totem Axe and Forgotten Fan offhand, which can both be found in the Falls. The Totem Axe is a very popular item with 55 monks nowadays, because it causes enchantments to last 20% longer and gives you energy plus 5. And then you have the Icebreaker Hammer and the Frozen Fan offhand, both found in Talus Chu. And then there's the Factions Greens. There are, count them, 168 of them in all. And now I'll go over each one of them, where they're found, their complete stats, what color dye you should use in your armor to coordinate them with your current outfit, and... okay, no I won't. But I will choose a few of the best ones and go over them. You're welcome again. Like I mentioned, you can start getting greens as drops, as early as Xingjie Island. These have non-maxed mods on non-maxed damaged weapons. And then when you get through Kanta, you'll find that the greens get progressively better. Like in Canine City and in Pengmei Valley, you can get max damage, but the mods will be less than desirable, something like while hexed or maybe a higher requirement. You don't really start finding the more sought-after Canton greens until you reach the Ekvald Forest or the Jade Sea. And by the way, in my opinion, the winner of the best-named green in factions goes to the Ugly Stick. That cracked me up the first time I saw someone say that they're wielding the Ugly Stick. Now, once you beat the storyline of factions, you get to an area called the Divine Path, where your character gets the Amulet of the Mists to trade for their choice of one endgame green item. To me, this whole arrangement is very well done. The idea of making a place where everyone from the game is there to congratulate you on your victory, and then let only one character get their choice of one item, now that's what Unique is all about. This, to me, makes up for the ridiculous availability of all other greens in Kanta. But, that said, many, if not all of these endgame greens, are exactly the same as many other greens that you'll find throughout the game. They just have different skins, which are kind of worth it in themselves. I think a lot of them, especially the ones that were designed as part of that Design a Weapon contest that was held back in November and December, those are definitely worth it. Those are some pretty sharp skins. There are four items available to warriors here at the Divine Path. We have the Dragon Crest Axe, Exalted Aegis Shield, Gavel of the Nephilim Hammer, and Shiro's Sword. I think probably the most popular of these is the Exalted Aegis, although few people realize that you can get a shield with the same exact stats from Weaponsmith Manzo in Canine Center. Of course, it doesn't have that gorgeous skin, though. That makes it worth it. And now for the Ranger, we have the Ironwing Flatbow and the Ironwing Longbow. The only real difference between the two of these being that the Flatbow is Zealous and the Longbow is Vampiric, but they're both pretty good weapons. For the Assassin, we have Ceremonial Daggers and Shiro's Blades. And then for the casters, we have the Straw Effigy and the Wayward Wand. These are available to every type of caster with every type of attribute requirement except Soul Reaping, Energy Storage, and Fast Casting. Although there is an energy storage version of the Straw Effigy. And also, a bit of trivia for you. The Straw Effigy is the only green item that can be dyed. Skills and Build segment, it'll be a short one where I'll discuss a skill that's pretty popular and helpful for a stance tank, and that skill is Gladiator's Defense. For 5 to 10 seconds, you have a 75% chance to block incoming attacks. Whenever you block a melee attack this way, the attacker suffers 5 to 29 damage. This Tactics Elite stance costs 5 energy and has a recharge time of 30 seconds. It can only be capped from the Facet of Strength in the Dragon's Lair. Now, there are a few skills that can work in combination with Gladiator's Defense to make it a pretty solid stance build. Like if you use the Shout On Your Knees, it'll recharge all stances if your enemies are knocked down. So, for the knockdown part of this, you can use a number of other skills such as Whirlwind, Bane Signet, Counter Blow, or several Hammer skills work also. So a little more about On Your Knees. First off, be aware that you lose all adrenaline when you use this, but this shouldn't really be a huge problem if you plan your build well enough. Also, if you do a hammer skill for your knockdown, be aware that the ones that remove all adrenaline shouldn't be used, since this one costs 6 spikes of adrenaline to work in the first place. And the only place you can get this skill is from Machiko in Canine Center. Some other skills that have been used with these two are Benetti's Defense to recharge your energy, Doliak's Signet to prevent being knocked down yourself, and then use Defensive Stance last, since it ends if you use a skill. You'll want to use as many stances as possible when you use Gladiator's Defense and On Your Knees because of the way that On Your Knees works. And just be aware that some of these use Strength and some use Tactics, so pick and choose without spreading your attributes too thin.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. In an update on August 18, they finally fixed the chat edit losing focus when a friend's status updates while the friends list is open. What that meant was, if you had your friends list open while you were typing and then someone logged in, your cursor would go off of the chat line and whatever keys you were hitting would start activating movement and whatnot. So, that'll be good if this is fixed because that has been really annoying. I hadn't planned on playing much of this special event that's going on this weekend, but since they've enabled PvP characters to get into Fort Aspenwood and Jade Quarry, I've been playing a Mesmer in there and enjoying that. I think it was a really good idea to allow the PvP characters to get in, and I think if they were to make this a permanent feature, people would really like that. I went into Tombs this week, and it was the first time that I went not as a Barrage Pet Ranger. I played the Monk, and let me tell you, I now have a great appreciation for Monks who are effective in there. It was a lot of work. But I did get a chance to test some new skills and break out of my usual healing niche because I left the enchantments and didn't bring those in. I brought a bunch of 5 energy straight heals, and I played with Healing Whisper and Ethereal Light. These were both pretty good, but I think I liked Ethereal Light better because it has the usual casting reach. With Whisper, since it doesn't reach as far, you have to run forward, cast, and then I would run away again, which I felt wasted a lot of time. So with Maxed Healing Prayers, these two spells do almost the exact same amount of healing. Both are 5 energy, a 1-second cast, but the recharge time on Whisper is a lot faster. The other difference is that Whisper heals at half range and Ethereal Light is easily interrupted. So they each have pros and cons, so it's kind of your preference if you were to use one or the other. My guild also went into Sorrow's Furnace, and we did a couple of FA runs, and we used a Braj pet group. It was the first time I ever tried that. And it worked really well. I think I liked it better than our old 5-man groups, where we had 2 monks, 2 necros, and a tank. What we did was we brought 3 rangers, 1 minion master, and 1 healer. And it went really smoothly. We're going to try doing Oro sometime and seeing how we fare getting through that quest. We're talking about green items this week, and a lot of times they're perfectly good items that you can get from a collector instead of buying a green. There is a collector shield that's got the same stats as Sunreach's shield, or for instance, I use Grognar's Defender, but you can get a shield with the exact same stats from a collector in the desert. So even if you had to buy the collector items that you needed to get it, that's still a price difference of like 8 or 10k. Often when a new item gets introduced into the game, the old one sort of goes out of fashion, like Victo's Bulwark, which, although it used to be highly sought after, now you can get it for under 40k. Some items, though, have still held steady at a certain price, like Rago's Flamestaff, because it's still the more favored one amongst anyone who's playing a Firecaster. Kushan's Firestaff used to sell for over 100k when it first came out, but now you can get it for less than Rago's. Also, like any new items that get introduced into the game, new greens usually enjoy high prices at first, and then they drop. So if you really want a new green, wait for the prices to go down before you buy it. And if you're looking to make money, farming for the item and selling it as quickly as possible is in your best interest, because you know that it's going to go down in price very quickly. A lot of the faction's greens dropped steeply after just a matter of weeks. One of the most dramatic ones that I saw was Kaolin's Domination Staff. That staff was literally a 400k staff, and now it's like 60. I've never gotten that one, but I've seen it drop for a friend of mine when we were out farming. I'm not sure if the huge price difference has anything to do with the changes that were made to the Sunjiang explorable area, but here's the deal on what happened with that. If you had a 4 or 5-man team, you wanted to make sure that they were all people that you knew and trusted, not just some random pickup group, and here's why. The construct bosses would be stuck in these bubble things, and you could nuke them and stuff, but they were still stuck in place. If the boss dropped an item, the item would be there with him inside of the bubble, and everyone in your party is outside of it. So let's say this expensive item dropped for you. It's sitting there in the bubble, and you can't reach it. What you would have to do is wait for the item to no longer be assigned to you, and then a necro in your party with necrotic traversal would teleport into the bubble to pick up the item for you. Then you would have to kill something outside the bubble, and the necro would teleport out and then give you your item. So, as you can see, it was kind of this long-involved process, and it's pretty obvious why you would want to farm with people that you know, because otherwise someone could just run off with your item. But when we were farming in that area not too long ago, I'd say about a month ago, we realized that the bosses were no longer stuck in their bubbles anymore. So it's actually now would probably be safe to go farm with a pug if you wanted to. And speaking of drops that are hard to pick up, I still meet people who are experienced players, but they were never aware that you can pick up the items that drop on the top of the towers in the Riverside Province mission. All you need to do is highlight the item so that you've got it selected, then you run up close to the tower near its door and hit the spacebar, or if you've changed your default keys, whatever you've made your basic action button. Just hit that and your character will pick up the item. This has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street.
So, that'll do it for another episode of Guildcast. I'll be having another contest next Sunday night, August 27th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It'll be a running contest this time, something I haven't done in quite a while. I figured I'd mix it up a little bit this time, too, and do a run that might prove to be a little bit of fun, and that would be a backwards Drox run. No, that doesn't mean you have to run backwards. It means that we'll be starting out in Drochner's Forge, International District 1, and then we'll run up to Camp Rancor first, and then over to the Grenth's Footprint Portal, then the Dreadnought's Drift Portal, Lorner's Pass Portal, and then finally ending in Beacon's Perch. That's a 5-zone race total. And check out the contest rules page on guildcast.com for more complete information on scoring in the running contest. And also during the week, I may try to fit in another forums contest, like a bounty or possibly a Name That Place contest if I get the time. The last time Gale Gray was in the game, people were suggesting a free-for-all tournament. And of course my first thought was, oh yeah, now that would make a nice contest. Just imagine that. You get like 8 people together to just duke it out, and the last one standing wins. That could be a lot of fun, but remember that this is just a suggestion by some players. And Gale, or Brant, or Alex, or anyone at ArenaNet, if you're listening, the free-for-all would be amazing, and we'd be your best friends forever if you implemented that. Now, on the Guildcast forums, Coogan has set up a contest of his own called the Rock, Paper, Scissors Tournament. Now, to sign up, you leave a post on the Guildcast forums with your in-game name, or you can PM him in-game at Princess of Glax. Now, he says that the best option might be to leave a post on the forum since he's not always online. Now, here's the rules. Anyone can enter. When entries are received, the entrant will be placed in the next available position in the bracket. After he gets all the entries, he'll start getting groups of 2 people together to hold a best-of-3 match. For each round in the match, the contestants will enter either /rock, /paper, or /scissors into the chat screen. To make sure both contestants begin at the same time, he'll count down like 3, 2, 1, go. The contestant that wins 2 out of 3 rounds will win the match. The winner of the match will move on in the bracket and advance to the next round. And the rounds will be played out until everyone has had a match. And there's only 1 entry per person. Now for the prizes, he put up, for the grand prize, 10 platinum, and any 4 prizes from the prize page. The runner-up will get any 4 prizes from the prize page. The second runner-up will get any 2 prizes from the prize page, and the third runner-up will get any 1 prize from the prize page. The deadline for entries is August 31st, so you can go on the forums and check out more information about this in the tournaments section of the forums. Now, next week's show will be all about the Assassin, which is the only class I haven't beaten the game with yet, so I'll have to rely a whole lot on research and maybe talking to other people in the game. We'll see how that goes. But until then, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.